TheYeshiva.net.
Bruchim Haboyim, Shalom Aleichem to one and all, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov to all of the Mesayimim of Mesechta Shabbos in the coming days, many months of learning this Mesechta and covering Kuf Nun Zayin Dafim from Daf Beis through Daf Kuf Nun Zayin, and this coming Sunday night, Monday, Chof Menachem Av, right? Tesvov Tezayin. Am I right? Today was Tesvov. Chof Menachem Av Tovshin Pei is the grand siyum of Masechta Shabbos. Mazel Tov to all the Mesayimim. Mazel Tov to all of the spouses who empowered the Mesayimim. Mazel Tov to all of the future Mesayimim. And Mazel Tov to all the Maschilim of Masechta Erevin. And Mazel Tov to all of Klal Yisrael, because of Simchas HaTorah, Sisu V'Simcha B'Simchas HaTorah, Avidne Yom Tovah L'Rabbanan is a Yom Tov for all B'nai Torah and for all of the Jewish people. So congratulations and Mazel Tov. This evening, we are going to learn a deep Hadron on Masechta Shabbos, one which will actually capture some fundamental ideas that pervade Masechta Shabbos, including what I would call capturing somewhat of the neshama, the soul of Masechta Shabbos, if we can use that word, that expression. Tonight we will focus primarily on the halachic aspects of the Hadron of Masechta Shabbos, what we would call the chelek hanigla, halacha, lomdus, pilpul. Be'ezer Hashem, tomorrow evening, Thursday 9 p.m., we will resume the shiur and continue to focus on the element of drush, machshava, hashkafa, musar, chsidus, kabbalah, of the siyum and the beginning and the toichen of Masechta Shabbos and its applications to our practical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual daily lives. This Hadron on Masechta Shabbos was presented by the Lubavitcher Rebbe many years ago. The Rebbe traditionally, from my memories, would make approximately 5 or 6 siyumim, public siyumim, during the year. Private siyumim I don't know about, but 5 or 6 siyumim throughout the year, which he would do at the Fabrengen, and then delve into a long, complex, intricate, usually brilliant, incredible Hadron, both Alpinigla and Alpinister in the siyum of the Masechta, Bavli and Yerushalmi. Often the Rebbe would also make a siyum on the whole Shas. This siyum of Masechta Shabbos, the Lubavitcher Rebbe presented, it was Shabbos Shlach, Tovshin Chav Beis, summer 1962. And there was a shiur that used to take place in 770 of Jews. It wasn't a big shiur, it was a small shiur, Masechta Shabbos, elderly Jews. And it was a continuous ongoing shiur, and they finished the Masechta. And the Rebbe said Shabbos at the Fabrengen, and he says, Ich bin schuldig, I'm in debt of a siyum on Shabbos, and he presented the siyum on Masechta Shabbos that we're going to learn. It was published later in Likutei Sichos, volume 14, Parshas Veschanon, which is the Parsha Das Linimine, the Parsha we're coming from, which of course includes Shabbos as one of the Aseres Hadibros. The Sicha, this shiur of the Rebbe, I didn't count, but from a superficial perspective as I was looking at it, It seems to me that it contains 400 or maybe 500 or more references to Svarim, Rishonim and Acharonim, on all of the sugyas of Masechta Shabbos that he addresses in this Hadron. Let's begin. We're going to learn the Mishnah and the Gemara, but first we have to have a few introductions. And I'm going to ask you to tune into these introductions, because if you don't really understand these introductions, it's extremely difficult to understand the whole siyum of Masechta Shabbos, the Mishnah and the Gemara. So it's important always to have the foundations in place. In the meantime, you can also open your source sheets. If you go to the yeshiva.net, you'll see siyum on Shabbos number 1, Hadron on Shabbos number 1. It's featured on top of the video. On the right, there's a blue icon. It says source sheets. Or if you want to download a PDF, below the video on the left, scroll down below the video, go down the page a little bit, and you'll see on the left it says PDF. And you can open it up, download it on your computer, or print it out. Or if you have a Likutei Sichos, you can open up volume 14, Parshas Va'eschanan. But please open up your source sheets, because I put in some images. which will make the understanding of the Siyum of Shabbos more accessible. Introduction number one. Among the 39 malachas that are forbidden on Shabbos, and hopefully if you're holding at the end of Shabbos, you remember what the 39 forbidden malachas are. One of them is, of course, boina. We're not allowed to build. Min ha-Torah, that includes only a permanent structure. What about a temporary structure? That's a rabbinic prohibition. So the Rabbanan, I'm not allowed to create a permanent structure, even a temporary structure. And that includes even an oil aray, which means a temporary tent. Let's say I have a frame, I have a few sticks standing, and I want to spread out a mat. It's a nice protection. That's a I'm going to take it apart. I don't need it permanently. It's a temporary tent. I'm not allowed to do it. However, the halach is, it's a machlekes Reb Elezer Chachamim earlier, daf kuf chavchet, kuf chavav, but the halach is that to add to a temporary tent, I'm allowed to. That means, if I really began rolling out the mat, and it's at least a tefach, a handbreadth spread out, I can continue it. I can't create create a permanent tent or a structure is biblically forbidden. Create a temporary one is rabbinically forbidden. But to add to a temporary tent, I'm adding what's called to an oil aray, that is permissible on Shabbos. Introduction number two. One of the 39 labors prohibited on Shabbos is called kosher, which means tying a knot. Like all the malachas, these were labors that were performed when they were constructing and building the Mishkan, and that's where the Chazal derived the structure of the 39 malachas. More about that later. And one of them is tying. We'll see where tying was in the Mishkan later. Min ha-Torah, what does it mean that you're prohibited to make a knot? There's a condition. It has to be a kesher shel kayama. Kesher shel kayama means a permanent enduring knot. And it's a fascinating halacha. It has to be a knot that when I tie it, my mindset is that it should remain there forever. As long as it exists, it exists. What happens if I decide, you know what, I just need it for 3 months or I need it for 3 years? Min ha-Torah, it's not forbidden. It's not a kesher shel kayama. The rabbis prohibited even an impermanent knot. Here itself, there's an argument brought in Shulchan Aruch and Simon Shun Yud Zayin. There's two shittas in the Rishonim. And that is, how enduring does the knot have to be even rabbinically? One opinion is at least 1 day. If it's longer than 1 day, then midirabbanan, I'm not allowed to make this knot. And I'm not allowed to untie the knot. Because you're not allowed to untie a knot that you're not allowed to make on Shabbos. You're not allowed to tie, you're not allowed to untie. Kosher amater. So if I make a knot in the morning, and my point is, I want to untie it at night, then even rabbinically it's permissible. And another opinion is that it has to be at least 7 days. If it's more than 7 days, then rabbinically it's prohibited. So again, min ha-Torah, the only knot that is prohibited is what? A kesher shel kayama, an enduring knot forever. I don't have in mind ever to take it apart. Maybe one day I'm going to need it and I'm going to take it apart. Fine. But right now, there's no established timeline when I'm going to take it apart. It's a permanent fixed knot as far as I'm concerned. It's as timeless as this thing will exist. However, rabbinically, even an impermanent knot, a kesher she'eino shel kayama, is also prohibited to make on Shabbos. And again, there's two opinions. Does it have to be longer than 1 day? Does it have to be longer than 7 days? And then it would be rabbinically prohibited. We usually follow the more stringent opinion discussed in Shulchan Aruch HaRechaim al Cheshabbos, Simen Shin Yud Zayin. In Turin, in Shulchan Aruch, and in Shulchan Aruch HaRav, in Mishneh Berurah, etc. Next, third exhibit. There's something called medida, which means measuring. Biblically, min ha-Torah, there's no problem to measure things on Shabbos. I can measure how big my couch is, I can measure how big my pool is, I can measure how big my field is, I can measure how long my counter is, and I can measure how long my bed is, and I can measure anything, whether it's food, whether it's my property. There's no issue. What's the problem of measuring? The rabbis prohibited medida. This is something that the rabbis prohibited, and the reason for that is because it's called uvdin dechayl. Or as the Shulchan Aruch Harav adds in Erechayim Simen Shinvav, Zilzul Shabbos, which means it's cheapening the spirit, it's denigrating the geist, the zeitgeist, the energy, the atmosphere, the ambiance of Shabbos. It's Uvdin Dechayl, it's something that we usually do during the week, it's usually associated with weekday mundane work. You know, you measure your house because you want to sell it, you measure or weigh a food because you want to buy it. It's usually associated with weekly mundane activities. And therefore, even though there's no problem of measuring on Shabbos, there's no prohibition biblically, the rabbi said you're not allowed to make measurements on Shabbos. Okay, now I want to change the subject for a moment and give another introduction. When a corpse is present in a home, everything that finds itself under the same roof with that mace becomes automatically spiritually impure. And it needs to go through a very intricate process in order to be cleansed from that impurity. So if someone, Chalila, passes away in a house under a roof, anything that's under that roof, which means people, utensils, anything that's susceptible to tumma will automatically become tumma. Not only that, even things that are not in the same room. If the house has another room, but it's all under the same roof, the roof connects the two rooms, there's a bedroom. And the door to the bedroom is open, so the tumma of the corpse travels into that bedroom, even if there's no door, even if there's just an opening, a window or a hole of a certain measurement, of a certain size, and there's a room open, so the tumma travels from this room, even though there's a wall, and the wall should create a partition between the tumma and everything that's in the room. But if there's an opening to the other room, the tumma will travel to every single room in the house as long as there is an opening between the room where the tumma is and the other room that is connected by the same roof. However, there is a critical exception. And that is, let's say, the mace, the corpse, any part of the corpse is under a roof and there's a hole in that roof. There's an opening in that roof. Then the tumma of the mace, so to speak, escapes. It escapes through that opening. And anything that's on top of that opening, if a plane flies over, it'll become tame. But anything that's not under that opening, the things in the house that are not touching the mace, will not become tame. That saves the other objects or utensils or people or food or drinks in the house from becoming tame. That opening in the roof can't be a tiny hole. It has to be what's called peseach tefach. It has to be an opening that is the length and the width of a hand breadth. So that means it has to be a tefach, is basically a hand breadth. It can't just be a little tiny opening in the roof. That's not enough. It has to be the length of a tefach, a hand breadth. But that's still not enough. Even if it's narrow, it has to be a tefach by tefach. Tefach in the length and tefach in the width. So if you have a tefach and you have a tefach like this, then you have rescued everything in the house from tumah. Last halacha that I want to share with you. And that's the halacha about a clay cheres. Halacha about a clay cheres, an earthenware vessel. Here on the video you have on the top, here you see a picture of a clay cheres, an earthenware vessel. This is a vessel that's made of mud and straw, and it's molded, and it's baked in the sun, or baked in a fiery furnace, and it becomes an earthenware vessel. There's a halacha. And that is the only way it could become tameh is me'aviroi. From its cavity, from its interior space. So for example, if a dead weasel touches the clay cheres right here on its exterior surface, every other vessel, let's say a metal vessel or a wooden vessel, would become tameh. But not an earthenware vessel. But if that dead weasel is suspended inside the clay cheres, look where the arrow is, in the cavity of the clay cheres, even if it doesn't touch the walls, the clay cheres becomes tamei. This is a unique halach of clay cheres in Parsha Shmini. Clay cheres mitamei only me'avirei. Okay, I hope you absorbed all of this. Let's now go to the text. Please open up your source sheets or open up a Masechta Shabbos. We're going to learn the last Mishnah and the last piece of Gemara of Masechta Shabbos. Let's begin the Mishnah. The last Mishnah of Shabbos, Daf Kuf Nun Zayin Amud Aleph. B'sha Toivo Mutzlachas Mazal Tov. Zok the Helika Mishnah. On Shabbos, you are allowed to seal a window. You're allowed to shutter up a window. You're allowed to measure a rag. You're allowed to measure a mikveh to make sure it has the appropriate amount of water to make it a kosher mikveh. I just told you, you're not allowed to build on Shabbos, you're not allowed to measure on Shabbos. We'll get to that in a moment. Now the Mishnah records a story. And this is the last Mishnah of Masechta Shabbos. It ends with a story. And here's the story. This is a story that took place in the days of the father of a Tana named Reb Tzadik. And in the days of a Tana named Abishol, the son of Botnis. These are two individuals who were from the great Talmudic sages, Tanoim, who lived in Yerushalayim. And they lived at the end of the era of the second Beis HaMikdash, but during the second Beis HaMikdash era. The second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70 after the Common Era. They lived a few decades before that in Yerushalayim. Reb Tzadik was, of course, the famous Tana who fasted 40 years because he sensed the Chorban is coming. This is his father. And another Tana, Abishol ben Batnis, who the Gemara describes in Masechta Beitza, how scrupulous he was when it came to honesty and authenticity. His integrity was mamish unparalleled. So this is a story that happens in their days. ways, and it's important because the fact that they were part of this story is what gives it its halachic power. What happened? Shepakaku es hamoir betafiach. They plugged a window. Moir means a window, which actually means not a window as we call a window, you know, a glass window. A window actually means an opening. Moir means, of course, a source of light, because that's what allows the light to come into a room when there's an opening. That's, or the window is open. So that's, they plugged a opening, a window, betafiach, with an earthenware flask. Tafiach is, they took an earthenware flask, like this picture, and they plugged the window. Here you could see a picture. They plugged the window with it. We'll soon see why. V'kashru es hamekida bigemi. They also took an earthenware vessel and they tied it with a strand of reed grass. Here you have a picture. I wanted to show you what reed grass looks like. It grows quite tall. So they took a reed grass and they tied this earthenware vessel probably to a stick. Okay, so now the earthenware vessel is attached to the top of a stick. Here you have a picture of it. By the way, in your source sheets, I also put in these pictures. Take a look at page 2. You'll see this picture you see. They tied, this guy is holding a stick and he tied the earthenware vessel to the stick. How did he tie it? He took a strand of reed grass. Leida, to know him, yesh bagigis paiseich tefachim lav. To know if in the barrel, if in the roof, upwards, on top, if there is an opening of a tefach or not. We're going to explain what this all means because I know it's enigmatic. It doesn't seem to be understandable. It's not. The Gemara is going to explain. I'm just quoting now. And translating. And from their words and from their behavior, who? Reb Tzadik, the father of Reb Tzadik and Abba Shaul ben Botnis, we learn three halachas. That on Shabbos, you're allowed to shutter, you're allowed to seal a window, you're allowed to measure, and you're allowed to tie. Wow. That's the end of the whole Masechet Shabbos in Mishnayos. You're allowed to shutter the window on Shabbos, you're allowed to measure, you're allowed to tie. What is this talking about? What happened? So the Gemara now continues. Let's see what the Gemara says. The Gemara tells us the background of the story, because if you don't know the background, you don't understand the Mishnah. Let's continue in the Gemara again. You can look in Masechet Shabbos or look in your source sheets, the first page. Said in the name of Rav, a fascinating and a sad and tragic story. And here is the story. There were two homes. This is how Rav explained the Mishnah. There were two. Of course, Rav had a tradition how to explain the Mishnah because his teacher, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, was the editor of the Mishnah, and Rav was his student. So Rav knew how to explain and articulate what the Mishnah is talking about. So we have the context and the story to understand what the Mishnah was saying. What happened? There were two homes. Between the two homes, there was a narrow alley, like a narrow path between the two homes. Okay, fine. Sadly, there was somebody who was about to die, and he was lying in that narrow pathway between the two homes, okay? But here's the issue. The two homes were connected by a roof, and this roof was an overhang over the person who's about to die. What does this mean? This means that when he dies, he's dying under a roof, and this roof is connecting both homes. And one of the homes has an opening. Remember, when someone dies under a roof, everything that's under that roof becomes automatically impure with tumas meis, with the tumah of a corpse. Not only that, if that roof is connecting two rooms, or in this case, two houses, and there's an opening in the wall of the home, so the tumah is now going to penetrate into the home. So if there's a kayan in that house, he and his entire family will become tameh. Any food there will become tameh. Any drinks will become tameh. If they had karbanos, if they had holy offerings in Yerushalayim, they wanted to eat it, it will all become tameh. Everything will have to be burnt. If the kohen has truma, holy food, it all becomes tameh. If it's a Yisrael or a Levi, still, all the vessels become tameh. Whatever is susceptible, everything becomes tameh. That means the beds become tameh, the clothes become tameh. We don't live with Tuma and Tara, so we don't really understand what it means. For us, it's an abstract concept. And as I always tell my Talmidim when we learn about these things, people shut down when they hear Tuma and Tara because it's like so irrelevant and abstract. So I'm asking you to listen because this is pretty fascinating, and this was part of the essential fabric of Jewish life. It's important if you want to understand who we are and where we come from, you have to understand Tumah and Tara. This was an essential fabric of daily Jewish life in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Today we still have a little bit of it, but not to that extent. So now everything in the house, all clothes, all foods, all drinks, all utensils, again, all those that are susceptible for Tumah, we're not going to get into all of the details, they all become Tumah. So what happened? Take a look at this picture. Sadly, the people in the house realized that somebody is about to pass away. Obviously, medically, they couldn't do anything to save him. So what they do? They took an earthenware flask. Take a look at this earthenware flask, you see? And they put it into the window. It was on Shabbos. They shutter the window. They plug the window with this earthenware flask. Look, take a look at this picture. I'm showing you on the video here. You see with the arrow, they take this and they put it into the window. They fill up the hole. So now there's no opening. Now here is how they do it. How they do it. Take a look. The outside of the earthenware vessel that's facing outward is not its cavity. It's not its open side. It's the sealed side. Why? Because in order for a vessel, earthenware, to block the Tumah, it can't be susceptible to Tumah. You can't block Tumah by something that's going to become Tumah, because then it's going to transfer the Tumah. So if they would have put a metal vessel over there, it wouldn't help. You know why? Because the metal vessel would become Tumah from the corpse, because it's under the same roof. And then the metal vessel would transfer the Tumah into the house, and everything in the house would become Tumah. So what they do, they took a tafiyach. They took a clay cheres, a mekidosh, they took an earthenware vessel. Remember the earthenware vessel? The earthenware vessel can only become tamei through its cavity, its interior space, not the outside. So now when they take the earthenware vessel and they face this exterior outward, so now the mesis tuma travels, hits the clay cheres, bounces back, so to speak, because the clay cheres cannot become tamei. So what happens now? It blocks, it obstructs the tuma, and the window is shuttered. So the whole house remains pure. And that's what happened. You see? They filled up the hole. This is what the Gemara says. They filled up the hole. That's what the Mishnah is talking about. So that the house wouldn't be tameh. Okay, now, the person passed away indeed. Now they needed this flask. They needed it. They needed the clay cheres. So the question is, they're not moving the maze. It's Shabbos. It's Muktzah. So they're leaving him there for the day. Are they allowed to take away this keli? And the answer is no! Because if they take it away, the tumah is going straight into the house. But wait. Take a look at the roof that's connecting the two houses, which was like a gigis, a huge barrel that became a roof connecting both houses, and the corpse was right under it. But take a look. There was a hole in it. There was a crack in it. The roof was cracked. Oy, if the roof is cracked above the corpse, so the tumah can escape. But wait, the crack has to be a tefach. It can't just be a tiny hole. It has to be a tefach by a tefach in order for the tumah to escape. How do we know if it's a tefach or not? So they took another vessel, another clay vessel, that was a tefach. It was a tefach. And what did they do? They decided, let's get this through the hole. If it fits through the hole, it means that the crack in the roof is a tefach. And that's why this clay vessel could go through. If it can get through, it gets stuck because the crack is too narrow, then obviously the crack is not wide enough, and then we have to leave the earthenware flask in the window. Because if we take it out, the tumah is going to travel because it can't escape. How do you get an earthenware vessel up into the roof? How do you do that? So they took a stick. Take a look at this picture. They took a stick. They took the earthenware vessel, and then they took a strand of reed grass, and they tied the earthenware vessel to the stick. So now it was solidly tied, it won't fall off. And now with the stick, they could lift up the clay cheres and see if it goes through or not. The Gemara doesn't say if it went through or not, but that's what they did in order to measure how big the crack is. Some people interpret it a little bit differently, that they actually didn't take a stick, but they tied the clay cheres to a strand of reed grass, and then, I guess from the roof of the house, they suspended it from the top through the crack to see if it goes down. Again, the same point, they're measuring how large the crack is. That's the story, the end of the story. Says the Mishnah, Medivreihem. From this story, we learn three halachas about Shabbos. This is what's called one vessel kills one. You kill one bird with three stones. Well, here, with one story, we cover three halachas. We learn three things about Shabbos. Number one, Paikakin. Number two, Maididin. Number three, Kaishrin. The first thing we learned about Shabbos is that you can shutter a window temporarily. You're not allowed to build. You can't build a structure. You're not allowed to build on Shabbos. So how can I insert a window and shutter it and plug it? So if I take a board and I nail it in or I fix a window permanently, then it's biblically prohibited. I'm adding to a binyan on Shabbos. But here, what am I doing? I'm just taking a flask and I'm just covering it temporarily. And remember, to add to an existing structure and it's only temporary, that you're allowed to, according to the Chachamim, not Rebbe Elazar, according to the Chachamim. And here we have, the Gemara says earlier, Kuf Chavav, Maaseh Rav. The greatest source of halacha is a maisa, a story, something that happened, that they allowed them to shutter the window on Shabbos. They did not protest it. Why? How can you shutter? How can you seal a window on Shabbos? You're building. You're adding to your home. You're plugging your window. The answer is, they're taking a flask. They're putting it there temporarily. That's not going to remain a permanent shutter. They're going to take it away afterwards. It's fine. That's halacha number one. Halacha number two, paikikin, moididin. You're allowed to measure on Shabbos. Look, they were measuring the crack in the roof. How are you allowed to measure? They were manipulating, they were trying to figure out if there's a tefach. That's why they picked up the keli to get it through the roof, to get it through the crack. You're allowed to measure on Shabbos. Third, kashrin, they tied. How did they get the earthenware vessel up in the crack? How'd they do that? The answer is because you could tie. They took the reed grass and they tied it to the vessel, and with that, they tie the vessel to the stick with this reed grass, and they could pick it up. Or they just tie the vessel to the reed grass, and they suspend it through the crack. Paikakin, or Maididin, the Kaishrin, B'Shabbos. And the Gemara finishes the last piece of Gemara, the last piece, and tells a story. The story we're going to focus on more at a later shiur, not tonight, but the story is that Ula saw Rabbi Bar Rav Huna sitting in a tub of water on Shabbos and measuring the water. And he said, the rabbis only allowed measurements if it's for the purpose of a mitzvah or a purpose of understanding and learning Torah. How can you measure it? And Rabbi Bar Rav Huna explained that he was just keeping himself busy. He wasn't interested in really knowing the sizes. That's the end of the whole Masechta Shabbos, the Mishnah and the Gemara. As the Mefarshim explain, and this is the halacha, when we say you're allowed to shutter on Shabbos, allowed to shutter a window temporarily, it's because it's fine. The Chachamim did not prohibit that. You're allowed to measure only for the sake of a mitzvah. So for example, if I want to measure a mikveh, if it has the appropriate size and amount of water that it's kosher for a mikveh, I can do that on Shabbos. But just to measure my counter, or measure my field, or measure my real estate property, I'm not allowed to do that on Shabbos. What about tying? I'm not allowed to make a knot on Shabbos. Even an impermanent knot, rabbinically, I'm not allowed to make an impermanent knot on Shabbos. However, if it's for the sake of a mitzvah, why were they making the knot here? Because they were trying to figure out a halacha of Tumah and Tara. They were trying to figure out a halacha in Torah. It was for the sake of knowing what the right halacha is, knowing what the mitzvah in this situation is, and therefore they were allowed to measure and they were allowed to make a knot on Shabbos. This is the end of Masechta Shabbos. Now, it is fascinating that the whole conclusion of the whole Masechta Shabbos is about Rabbi Bar Rav Huna sitting in a tub of water on Shabbos and measuring the size of the bathtub, measuring it, seeing how large it is, the walls, the water, and Ula confronting him, you're not allowed to do this, it's not a mitzvah, what do you have to do this? And he said, no, I'm just, you know, I'm sitting here in the bath, I have nothing to do, I need to keep myself busy, so, you know, I'm looking here, I'm looking there, it's not significant, it's inconsequential, I'm not interested in the measurements. And that's the whole end of Masechta Shabbos. What is the meaning of this? Why did the Gemara, the editors of Talmud Bavli, Rabashi, Ravina, their students, their children, decide that this should be the conclusion of Masechta Shabbos? We're still going to get to that. But here, in the Lubavitcher Rebbe's shiur on the Siyum of Shabbos, Hanan of Shabbos, he addresses what seems like a very minuscule diuk, a very small question. But we know in Chazal and in Gemara, every word is quite meticulous and precise. Not quite, but meticulous and precise. So he addresses a fascinating and interesting question. I wonder how many of you, I'm going to tell you the question is on these words, Poikikin, Umaydidin, V'Kaishin, B'Shabbos, which are the last words of Mishnah Shabbos. What would be the question? think about it. What would be the question? The question would be, okay, take a look at the picture. What happened first? What happened first in the story? Let's see. What happened first? Poikakin or Maidadin or Kaishin? They shuttered the window, they measured or they tied. Let's see the order. The first thing they did was, before he died, they shuttered the window, right? So that's Poikakin. That was the first thing. What was the next thing they did? Maidadin or Kaishin? The next thing they did was Kaishin, right? Not Maidadin. Kaishin is, they tied the earthenware vessel to a strand of reed. They tied it to a strand of reed, or with a strand of reed. They tied it to the stick. So that was the second thing. What's the first thing they, what's the third thing they did? They lifted up the stick. Take a look at the picture. To get the vessel, the earthenware vessel, through the crack. Moidedin. To measure if it's a tefach. So what should have been the order in Mishnayos? Poikakin, the Kaishrin, or Moidedin b'Shabbos. Because that's how the story happened. First they shuddered, then they tied, and then they measured. That's not what the Mishnah says. Poikakin, or Moidedin v'Kaishrin b'Shabbos. So you'll say, what's the difference? Why? When the Chazal are describing a story in a specific order. Take a look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Pakaku es amar betafiach. They plug the window with a vessel, a tef, with a earthenware flask. Vikashru es amedide begami. And then they tied the earthenware vessel to a stick with reed. That's the second thing. Now the third thing, in order to measure and figure out if there's a tefach or not. So the Mishnah clearly told us the story. So the Mishnah should finish. But no, the Mishnah changes the order in the halacha. Why? Especially when you look at the Gemara, what happens right after the explanation of this story? What does he go into? He goes into a story of measurements. Of Ula seeing Rabbi Bar Avuna measuring the bathtub. That means that the sequence would have been much more logical according to the story. Poikakin, Kaishrin, and Moidedin. And then you finish with Moidedin, and now you go to the next story, which is about Medida. But that's not what happens. The Mishnah finishes with Kaishrin. That's the last thing. And then the Gemara goes back to Medida, which anyway happened at the end. Something is strange here. How do we understand this? Now it seems at the surface that it's a little diuk. It's not so significant. But as I said, every word in Chazal, especially in Mishnayos, the Rambam says, is Loshen Ktsara, V'Koyle L'Inyanim Rabim. Every word in Mishnayos is so meticulous and precise. And that's why we see how many pages of the Gemara are dedicated just to figure out one word of Mishnah, an extra word. Why did he have to say it this way? He could have said it this way. Certainly, when he changes the story a line later and he puts it in a different order, you have to understand the meaning of this. And as we shall see, from the Rebbe's perspective, this little change of order is not little at all. It actually opens up a vista. It opens up a portal to understand some fundamental gedarim and yesoides in Maseches Shabbos, including the siyum of the Masechta. If I may give a little analogy for this, Zois HaTorah Adam, we compare the Torah to a human being and the human being to the Torah. When it comes to DNA, we know today that one cell, one invisible cell, when you get to the nucleus of that cell and you can discover its genome, the genetic code at the core, at the nucleus of that cell, that tiny, minuscule formation and sequences of DNA letters actually conveys and captures and personifies and mirrors the entire living organism. You never say, oh, it's a tiny little cell, what can it tell me? The tiny Zois HaTorah Adam, a detail in the order of Mishnayos, can tell you some of the fundamental ideas that encompass the whole organism, the whole Torah, the whole Masechta Shabbos. Because Klal and Prat in Yiddishkeit are very deeply connected. Klal or Prat or Klal. We go from the Klal, we go to the Prat, and from the Prat you come back to the Klal, and every Prat in a way captures the whole Klal. Now, at first glance, you can give the following answer. You know why Poikakin says first? Not because that was the order of the story. No, Chazal don't care about that so much. It's because Poikakin is the biggest chiddush here. What's the bigger chiddush that you're allowed to do on Shabbos? Measuring, tying, or shuttering a window. The first chiddush, the greatest novelty, is poikekin. You know why? Because as Tosfos writes, on daf kuf chavav amid beis, there's a Tosfos there, and that's the halacha, you're allowed to shutter a window even if it's not for a mitzvah. Because Tosfos says, it is so similar to adding to a structure that if the Chazal allowed it, it means they always allowed it. Because this is something that's so daima labinyan. You're pashut filling up your window. It's like you're putting in a window. You're putting a board into your window. You're allowed to do that on Shabbos? It's so similar to construction. And yet the Chazal said, you're allowed to do it. So Tosfos says, even if it's not for a mitzvah, if they allowed such a thing, they always allowed it. Because if they wouldn't allow it in regular cases, because it's so much like a structure, they wouldn't even allow it for a mitzvah. So that's the bigger chiddush here. So maybe that's why we start off with poikekin. And there's a Tosfos in Maseches Kedushin, the beginning of Perek Ha'ish Mekadosh. The Mishnah says, Ha'ish Mekadosh boy u'bishluchai, daf memalof kedush. So the Gemara asks a question, why did it say boy u'bishluchai? Hashta bishluchai boy mi boya. If you tell me that a person is allowed to betroth his wife through a messenger, for sure he can do it himself. So just say, Ha'ish Mekadosh bishluchai, for sure he can do it himself. So the Gemara answers, to teach me that mitzvah boy yosem bishluchai, it's better if you do it yourself. You could send a shliach to betroth the woman, but it's better if you do it yourself. So Tosfos asks, in Kiddushin Memalef, what's the question of the Gemara? Maybe you could say that the Gemara is saying, loizu avzu. Which means, first I say the simple halacha, ha'ish mekadesh boy, you could do it yourself, and now I'm going to tell you a bigger chiddush, b'shluchai. What's the problem? So Tosfos says, this concept, that you say this obvious, and then you say the more novel idea, that's only b'shtei babois, avol b'shtei tevis loy, that's the language of Tosfos. That you could do when it's two separate stanzas, or two separate mishnas, or two separate sentences. But if it's two words, boyu b'shluchai, that principle doesn't make sense. That's Mas Yosef explains beautifully the logic of Tosfos. That when it's shtei babis, when it's two separate sentences, so you could say each one was taught at a separate occasion, and they contained the integrity of each one. Everyone was self-contained. So therefore, Tosfos is saying, you could say, first they had the simple one, and then they taught the novel one, and once they taught the novel one, they're not going to go and delete a previous mission or previous teaching that they had already, so they left it. But when it's two words, right, one right after another, that's what Yosef explains brilliantly, then you certainly knew what the second word is going to be before you wrote the first word, because it's all part of one sentence. It's one word after another word. So here Tosfos says, this principle doesn't apply. First you say the chiddush. You don't tell me the obvious, and then you say, and also another one, which is a bigger chiddush. And therefore, the Gemara says, why does it say boyo b'shluchai? It should only say ish mekadosh b'shluchai. And therefore, the Gemara proves from this that mitzvah boyo yosem b'shluchai. According to this principle of Tosfos, which the Lubavitcher Rebbe develops at length in the footnotes of this sikha, it would make sense that the Chazal here are not so interested in the chronology of the story, but rather in the halachic ramifications of the story, obviously. So therefore, the first thing they say is poikekin, because poikekin is the bigger chiddush, that even if it's not for a mitzvah, you're allowed to shutter a window on Shabbos. Very nice, that's a beautiful insight. However, when it comes to Moedidin doesn't seem to be a bigger chiddush than Kaishrin. So why do they do Moedidin before Kaishrin? Moedidin and Kaishrin are both only allowed the Makkah Mitzvah. You're only allowed to make measurements on Shabbos if it's for a mitzvah or it's part of Torah learning. And you're only allowed to make a knot on Shabbos if it's for a mitzvah. Both are rabbinic prohibitions that you're only allowed to do in the case of a mitzvah. So Moedidin is not a bigger chiddush than Kaishrin. So why don't they already follow the way the story happened? Poikekin, they write first, both because it's the first thing that happened, and it's a bigger chiddush. But once Moedidin and Kaishrin, Moedidin is not a bigger chiddush than Kaishrin. They're both permitted only by Makkah Mitzvah. So therefore, Kaishrin is a chiddush, and Moedidin is a chiddush. So you should say Kaishrin before Moedidin, because that's the way the story happened. Furthermore, Moedidin is actually a lesser chiddush than Kaishrin, and I'll tell you why. When you tie a knot that's impermanent, it actually looks like a knot that's permanent. An observer won't know the difference. And when you make a permanent knot, it's biblically prohibited. When you make an impermanent knot, it's rabbinically prohibited. Why did the Chachamim prohibit an impermanent knot? Because it looks like a permanent knot. Somebody who's watching me doesn't know when I make a knot if I'm thinking it should stay there for 3 months or for 3 years or forever. He doesn't know the difference. The two knots seem perfectly similar to each other, identical to each other. So that's why the Chachamim prohibited even an impermanent knot, because it looks like just like a permanent knot. An impermanent knot doesn't mean it's not a good knot. It could be a good knot, a fine knot. It's just impermanent. It's not fixated forever. So the reason they assert an impermanent knot is because it's mamish similar to a permanent knot. What about measuring? Measuring is not similar to any malacha. It's not involving any malacha. The reason they did it is because it's a mundane act, because it denigrates the spirit of Shabbos. So where is there a bigger chiddush that it should be mutter to do it on Shabbos for a mitzvah? Kaishrin or Maidedin? Kaishrin is a much bigger chiddush, because Kaishrin has an element that mamish is similar to a malacha in a Torah. The difference is the timeline in your mind. So the Chachamim answered this because it looks like this. But Medida, they didn't answer because it looks like a malacha in a Torah. There's no malacha of measuring on Shabbos. The reason they did it is because they felt that it's not in the spirit of Shabbos. So it's included in the Tishbos. Fine. So where is there a bigger chiddush that you're allowed to do it on Shabbos for a mitzvah? Kaishrin is a bigger chiddush. So if so, the order should have been Poikikin, V'Kaishrin, or Maidin B'Shabbos for two reasons. Number one, because that's the way the story happened. First they shuttered the window, then they tied the vessel to the stick, and then they measured the crack. That's first of all. And second of all, mitzad halachic ramifications, the bigger chiddush is paikikin, the next bigger chiddush is kaishrin, and finally the third chiddush is maidedin. So the order should have been paikikin v'kaishrin maidedin b'shabbos. And I added that also mitzad the hemshich of the Gemara continues to discuss medida, so certainly it would have been geschmack to finish off with medida and then continue with the story of Ola and Rabbi Rav Huna when it comes to medida. Let's start with explanation. And here, I'm going to ask you to open up the text of the Sicha. If you're opening up your source sheets, so scroll down a little bit. You have to go quite a few pages. I think we can take away the picture now, right? Okay, let's go back here. We can go back to the picture. We can go back to a regular view. And open the text of the Sicha, please. I will open it as well. And I'm going to ask you after the question. We are going to start with the explanation. Siv Beis. You see? Lukutei Sichas Veschanan. We're going to Siv Beis. After all the questions about Paikikin, Maidedin, V'Kaishra. V'Yuvan calls it Bahakdim, Masha Shaninu, B'Tchilis Masechus Shabbos, Shemalechus Seitzah, Eina Asudim, Medei Reisa, Leboifin, Shamaitzi, Oysa, Akidah, V'Anocha. In order to understand all of this, we have to go back to the beginning of Masechet Shabbos. The end of Masechet Shabbos is about building and tying and measuring. That's the end of Masechet Shabbos. The end of Masechet Shabbos. What's the beginning of Masechet Shabbos? The beginning of Masechet Shabbos speaks about the prohibition of carrying on Shabbos. We all know one of the Lamatas Malachas on Shabbos is you're not allowed to pick something up from a private domain and bring it out and put it down in a public domain, or conversely. As the opening Mishnah of Masechet Shabbos makes clear, the only way it's prohibited min HaTorah is if you do an Akira and a Hanocha. If you do an Akira without an Anocha, or Anocha without an Akira, it's only rabbinically prohibited. It's not Asur min HaTorah. What does it mean to make an Akira and an Anocha? Akira means to pick something up, to take it away, to uproot it from where it is now. Hanocha means to put it down. So let's say I pick up a football from my house, and I take the football, and I go outside into a Rishus HaRabim, a public domain, and I put it down there. That is the Malacha of carrying on Shabbos. Or conversely, I take the football from the public domain, I bring it into my house, I put it down there, that's the malacha of Shabbos. What happens if this scenario? I pick up a challah from my house. So I did an Akira, I picked it up, the challah was on my kitchen table, I picked up the challah, so I did an Akira, okay? Now, if I would walk out of my house and go into a Rishus HaRabim, to a public domain, and stay there, or put it down over there, that's a hanocha. Fine. But I didn't do that. I picked up the challah, so it's on the way. I made a departure. Departure I did, but I didn't do arrival. Meaning, I take the challah, I stretched out my hand outside, and there's a poor man waiting there. He wants to be fed. What did the first Mishnah Masechet Shabbos, everybody remembers? Parshat balabayit esyade lechutz v'notel ani mitoicha. The poor man now takes the challah from my hand, and he puts it down. I did the Akira, he did the Hanacha. Or the other way around. The poor man takes a basket, right? He picks it up from the public domain. So he did an Akira. But he doesn't come into my domain and stand there or put it down. Rather, he takes this basket, he picked it up from the public domain, he stretches his hand into my house, and I come, and I take it from him, and I put the basket down on my counter, and I fill it up with challah, and I pass it back to him. So he did the Akira, I did the Anachim. In HaTorah, you're allowed to. This is not called carrying. Why? Because an Akira without a Hanacha, or Hanacha without an Akira, min HaTorah is not called carrying. You're allowed to do it. The Rabbanon assert Akira and Hanacha, even if you do only one of them. It's only rabbinically prohibited. That's one of the major themes in the opening of Maseches Shabbos. I hope it's clear. Now, here is a big question. It's a big question it's a well-known question in Achronim. As he brings in the footnotes, the Steichemed gathers all the Achronim that discuss it. There's a famous shtickel from this, he brings in the footnotes from Toitzos Chaim of Reb Menachem Zembe. Reb Menachem Zembe was one of the Goinei Hador. He lived in Warsaw, in Poland, and he was killed in the Warsaw Ghetto, April 1943, Pesach. Menachem Zembe was one of the extraordinary Goinim of the last generation, right before the World War, and was murdered then in 43. As one of his farms called Toitzos Chaim, Maseches Shabbos. There he discusses it at length. The Sefer Chelkas Yoyev by Reb Yoyev Yeshua Weingarten was a Talmud of the Avnei Nezer, is the rabbi of Kinsk in Poland. He was also one of the Goinim in Poland known as the Chelkas Yoyev. His name was Reb Yoyev. Reb Yoyev Yehoshua Weingarten. He passed away, I think, in 1922 or 1923, the early 20s, also before the Second World War. And many other Acharoinim, both in the world of Poland and Galicia and the Litvisher world, Litvisher Rosh Hashivas, a lot of Acharoinim discussed this in their Shiurim on Maseches Shabbos. And they ask a basic question. Why is Hanacha without Akira and Akira without Hanacha not Asim and Atayra because of Chatzi Shir? What is Chatzi Shir? Chatzi Shir means the half measurement. Let's give an example. I'm not allowed to eat blood. What's the shear of eating a kazayas, the volume of an olive? What if I eat a half an olive? What if I eat blood and I consume only a half a shear of blood? Or let's say chametz on Pesach. I eat a crumb of bread. Am I allowed to do that? I'm not eating a piece of bread, a kazayas of bread, the volume of an olive. I'm not doing that. I'm just taking a few little crumbs of bread, of a bagel, of a pizza, and I eat it on Pesach. Am I allowed to do it? Minatayra, that's not eating. Eating is kazayas. That's the only way you get a penalty. What about pig, swine? What about horse meat or anything today? Fat, blood, chalef, non-kosher meat. I eat a little piece of meat. I don't even eat a kazayas. Am I allowed to do that or not? Machlokes in Masechet Yuma, in Dalet, I think Rabbi Yochanan, Rish Lakish, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, chatzi shir, asur min ha-Torah. A half a shear is prohibited biblically. There's no penalty, a person won't get lashes because there's no shear, but a chatzi shear is asur min ha-Torah. You're not allowed to consume even a half a shear min ha-Torah. And the same is true, at least according to Rashi and many Rishonim, when it comes to Shabbos. For example, writing on Shabbos is prohibited min ha-Torah. How much? There's a shear, two letters. Aleph Beis, or Beis Gimel, or Shin Mem. What happens if I write one letter? I take a pen on Shabbos, Chas V'Shalom, and I write one letter. Am I allowed to do that? I'm not allowed to do that. Chatzi shir, asa min ha-Torah. I'm not going to have to bring a carbon chatos. There's no penalty, but I'm not allowed to do it on Shabbos. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to take a scissor and cut your hair, right? Geizes. You're not allowed to cut your hair. Biblically, it's a issur min ha-Torah. How many? Two strands of hair. What if I take a scissor and I cut one strand of hair? It's called chatzi shir. Am I allowed to do it? Min ha-Torah, I'm not allowed to do it. There won't be penalties, there won't be consequences, but it's also min ha-Torah. This is a chatzi shir. Another example. I'm not allowed to carry on Shabbos, right? But there's a shir. It has to be the size of a fig. What if I take a cholun bean? You know the size of a cholun bean? I take a cholun bean, I pick it up from my counter, and I go out to the public domain, and I put it down over there. I just stand there. Am I chayiv? Do I have to bring a carbon chatos? Is there a skillet? No. Why? It's a chatzi shir. Wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. It's called a half a shir, which means part of the shir you did, but you're still not allowed to do it. Ask the Acharonim a question. When I carry on Shabbos, and I only make an akira, and I don't make a hanacha, why do we say min ha-Torah it's mutter? Only midrabbanan it's asr. Why shouldn't it be asr mitam chatzi shir? It's true. I didn't do the full malacha. I didn't do the full shir of the malacha, meaning I didn't pick it up and bring it out and put it down. But l'chayda, I did a half a shir of the malacha. Just like when I cut one strand of hair, or when I write one letter, or when I take out a half a kazayas, or when I eat a half a kazayas, or when I take out a chalun bean, or when I eat a half a kazayas. I didn't eat the whole kazayas, but I ate part of it, and doing part of an isser is also usser. Because the isser is made up of parts, right? Chazilitz teruf, as Rabbi Yochanan says in Yuma, the end of Yuma. An isser is made of parts. 50% is not 100%, but it's 50%. A chalun bean is not an olive, but it's a certain percentage of an olive. An olive is made up of a lot, the size of a lot of chalun beans. One strand of hair is not two strands of hair, but it's 50%. 50% is part of 100%. So if 100% is absolutely forbidden, 50% is also forbidden min ha-Torah. Okay, an akira is 50%. I didn't do 100%, that's true. I picked up the object, I put my hand outside, right? I did an akira. You take it from me and you do the hanacha. I did 50%, you did 50%. We should both be usher to do that. Min ha-Torah, we don't say that. Min ha-Torah is completely mutter. What's the havana? So Rabbi Nachum Zembe, Hashem Yinkim Dame, articulates this beautifully as well as in other svarim. Let's see how he articulates this. Umevura b'yishev hadavar. The explanation is al pi adiyug b'adgoshes haloshen dahay klal gufa. Ha isu min ha-Torah hu dafke b'chatzi shir. Haynu shechaser rak b'shir. Kamus ha-isur v'loy b'muhusay v'eichusay. Aval im ha-chisarnu b'muhusay isur loy asr ha-Torah. V'chenu b'nidin didan. Sha'akiru ha-enocha levada haray en chatzi melocha. V'loy chatzi shir. Chatzi be'eichos v'gidrei u'muhus p'ulas ha-itza. L'chein eina asura min ha-Torah. Beautiful, beautiful definition. There's a difference between chatzi shir and chatzi melocha. Don't confuse the two. What's the difference? Chatzi shir means I did the whole melocha. What's missing is quantity of the melocha. When I take a scissor and I cut one strand of hair, I did the whole melocha. I cut hair. I took the scissor and I cut the hair. What's missing is it was not enough of the quantity that's required. I take out a chalun bean, I take it out of my house, I put it down on a public domain, I did the whole malacha. The tsuras ha-malacha is here, it's not a half a malacha. The shear of the malacha is missing. It's 50%, it's not 100%. In other words, the size, there's something missing in the size, in the quantity, in the measurement. A chalun bean instead of a fig. One hair instead of two strands of hair. I wrote one letter, I did the whole malacha of ksiva. I wrote a letter. I took a pen and I placed the ink on the paper, on the parchment, and I wrote a letter. That's a malacha. That's a full malacha. What's missing is the shear, the measurement, the quantity. When I do an akira without a hanacha, it's not a chatzi shear. It's a chatzi malacha. I did not do the malacha. It's not I did the whole malacha, but the shear is missing. The very tsuras ha-malacha is lacking. The eichos ha-malacha, it's not just a problem in the quantity of the malacha, it's a problem in the quality of the malacha. I did not achieve the malacha. So that's not asur min ha-Torah. An example. Departure without arrival. Okay, I say I'm traveling from New York to Yerushalayim. No, alavai, we should be able to. Bekarev. I'm traveling from New York to Yerushalayim. So I tell you, I'm in Yerushalayim. We already departed. We departed from JFK Airport. That's an akira, right? The plane took, you'll forgive my example. We like to be a little descriptive. The plane took off. So there was a departure. There was an akira. But, so you'll say, you're missing a shear of the malacha. There was no arrival. The plane didn't land. The plane didn't land. You don't have the malacha of Eitzah. The mahus of Eitzah is missing. The toichen of Eitzah didn't happen. Eitzah means taking out something from one domain to another domain. Here, I did departure, but there was no arrival. When I write one letter, the whole malacha was done. It's just the Torah wants two letters. For whatever reason, there's a reason the Torah wants two letters, not one letter. There's a reason because of the krashim. There's a reason you need two hairs, not one hair. There's a reason that a chalun bean is not enough. But the whole malacha happened. There was departure and arrival. I took out the chalun bean and I put it down. I picked it up and I put it down. Here, the plane took off, it never arrived. There was no haitzah. It's not that there's missing a shear. I arrived, but my suitcase didn't arrive. Or somebody who was traveling with me didn't arrive. So you could say, I was hoping two people are going to come. Only one person came. But this person came. There was departure and there was arrival. Here, there's an Akira without Anocha, Anocha without an Akira. You're not missing the Shir of the Malacha. You're missing the Muhus of the Malacha. The Malacha never happened. It's half of the Malacha. It's not 50% of the measurement of the Halacha. It's 50% of the Malacha. It's 50% of the Malacha. The Toichen HaMalacha never materialized. Therefore, Min HaTorah, it's not an Issa. Only Midirabbanan. That's the difference between Chatzi Shir and Chatzi Malacha. That's why he uses the words kamus and echos. Chatzi shir, what's missing is the quantity of the isser. When I eat blood, even if I eat a little blood, I eat a little pig meat, I eat a little horse meat, I eat a crumb of chametz on Pesach. Yeah. Whatever it is that I'm eating, something that's usser, I ate blood. The blood went into my mouth and I consumed it. I ate the chazer, the dover acher, it went into my mouth and I consumed it. What's missing is the shear of it, the quantity of the meat. I don't have a kazayis, I have less than a kazayis. But here, the chisorin is not in the quantity of the isser. The chisorin is in the muhus of the isser. The chisorin is in the very experience, in the very essence, in the very tzura of the malacha. It's a chatzi malacha, it's not a chatzi shir. And therefore, it's mutar ben hatorah, which is a very clear and logical distinction. I should just say, as he points out in footnote 16, that chatzi shir by Shabbos is not so poshut. Rashi holds that it's chatzi shir by Shabbos. The Meiri holds that it's chatzi shir by Shabbos. The Gaon Sashri holds that it's chatzi shir by Shabbos. The Rambam, it seems, doesn't hold that there's a din of chatzi shir by Shabbos. So we're discussing this according to the Rishonim, Rashi, etc., that there is chatzi shir by Shabbos, and you're not allowed to do a chatzi shir on Shabbos. Still, Akira without Anocha, Anocha without Akira is not aser. Why? Because it's not a chatzi shir. What is it? It's a chatzi melacha. Ich bin nicht angekommen. Ich bin avek. Ich bin nicht angekommen. I departed. I never arrived. Now, if this is the case, let's think for a moment about tying knots. If I tie a knot for 3 months, I take a knot, I make a knot, I tie something for 3 months. Min ha-Torah, it's fine. I'm allowed to do it. The Rabbanan said I'm not allowed to. Why am I not allowed to? It's very similar to a permanent knot, right? The rabbi said, okay, it's not forever, but it's still 3 months. So they said it's usher. They said it's usher. Why shouldn't it be usher min ha-Torah because of chatzi shir? Same question. I didn't do the full shear of the knot. I didn't have in mind that I want this knot to stay here forever. I only wanted to be here for 3 years, for 3 months, for 3 weeks. Zolzayin. But it's a chatzi shear. Just like when I write one letter. Okay, I didn't write the full 2 letters, but I wrote 1 letter. So 50% I did. So why don't we say that an impermanent knot should be asur min ha-Torah as chatzi shir? Even if I taka didn't have a kesher shel kayama in mind, so it's not a full shir, but it should be a chatzi shir. We say that's not the case. Min ha-Torah, you could make an impermanent knot. What's the reason for this? So the Havana here is because let's see. Via Shleiman. Shalderazo Gambenegea Likshida. The Lichaida Gambi Keshishena Shal Kayama Hainu Keshachasi Bisium Bishlemus Shalmalechas Akshira Maiso Uman. Neshaini Koshir Aldasi Yashar Kane calls Manchev Shalalias Kayam. Yeshlahakshas. Lamalay Yasuminatayam Tam Chatzishir. Even if I make a kesher that's not permanent, in other words, I didn't get to the end of it, I didn't get to the completion of it, I didn't finish it off because I didn't have in mind that it should be permanent, okay. But it should still be osim in ha-Torah as a chatzi shir. The answer is, v'atiritzu al derech hanal. Ein ze chatzi shir bekamusa shel ha-malacha, ki im chatzi melacha. Chaser be'echos v'gidrei u'muhusa shel ha-malacha. Ki adas sheyishar kein la'olam hu chelik me'echusa u'migidrei ha-malacha. U'bilada chaser be'gedr ha-malacha v'lachin ein asura min ha-Torah. The answer is exactly the same way. The same answer that the Menachem Zemba and other achironim give about chatzi malacha and chatzi shi, you can apply also to making a knot. Why? If it's not a permanent knot, it's not a chatzi shir. It's a chatzi melacha. Meaning, It's not that I did the melacha, I'm just missing something in the quantity of what I did. No. The tzura of the melacha never happened. Why did the tzura of the melacha never happen? Because just like akira without hanocha, I'm not missing in the quantity. It's a cholent bean, it's not a fig. It's a cholent bean, it's not an egg. No. The tzura of the melacha never happened. I departed, I didn't arrive. I picked it up from my kitchen table. That's not Eitzah. You don't have the Indian of Eitzah is not here. The Tzura of Eitzah is not here. Eitzah never happened. It's not you're missing in the quantity. You're missing in numbers. You're not missing in numbers. The Eichus is not here. The Toichin is not here. The Mehusa Malacha is not here. You didn't transfer something from Rishus HaYoch to Rishus HaRab. My problem is not measurements. My problem is the Malacha never happened. You started something that's part of a malacha. The plane took off. That's the beginning. You can't arrive if you don't take off. But taking off doesn't mean you can't Eretz Yisrael. It means you left the airport. There's no anocha. Got it. A knot, if it's not a permanent knot, it's not pshat, it's a chatz yishir. It's not the malacha. The malacha is a fixed knot. The malacha is a kesher shel kayama. That's the malacha. If I don't do it, what's missing is the tzuras hamalacha. The very toichen hamalacha never happened, because what's the toichen of the malacha? That this knot is going to be eternal. Eternal, obviously, relative to human experiences and human possibility and human circumstances. Ah, you'll tell me, no, I had in mind it should exist for 3 months, so that's a chatz yishir. Min ha-Torah, you needed to exist for many, 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 many years. And I did 3 months. So 3 months is chatz yishir. It's like a cholent bean. That's not the pshat. Kesher shel kayama min ha-Torah doesn't mean 3 months versus 6 months. 3 months versus 30 years. 3 months versus 190 years. That's not pshat kesher shel kayama. Kesher shel kayama is not a question of time. It's a question of eternity. It's a kesher that from your perspective, you want it to be permanent. And unless something happens later, you on your own, I'm not going to change it. Later you may regret it and change it. We don't have an issue with that. It's still a kesher shel kayama, because right now, what's my machshava? My machshava is a kesher that never gets changed. I don't want there should be a shinui in it. I don't want there should be a geder mechudesh in it. Nothing should be transformed in it. It's not a question of time. You say, I thought about it for 1 month, and you have 2 months, and you have 3 months, and you have many more months. No, it's a different type of malacha. If I made a knot only for 1 year, I'm not missing the quantity of the malacha. I'm missing the very tzura of the malacha. The very tzura of the malacha is not here. Just like by akira and anacha. An akira without an anacha, I'm not missing in the quantity. The tzura of the malacha is not here. Why? Because malacha seitzah means you have to take it out and put it down. Malacha kshira means that it's a permanent knot. That is malacha kshira, min ha-Torah. The rabbi said this kshira. That's also not permanent, but that's only midrabbana. So you'll say, min ha-Torah, you did chatz yishir. You didn't do chatz yishir. You didn't do the malacha. You didn't begin to do the whole malacha. Yes, you made a physical knot. That's true. Just like you made an akira. But that's not the malacha. The malacha is a kesher nitzchi. The malacha is a kesher that's not changeable. It's not a question of time. This is 10 months and this is 20 months. If min ha-Torah would be 20 months and midrabbana would be 10 months, so you'll say it's a chatz yishir. That's not what happened. If it's for 3 months, if it's for 10 months, you didn't do the malacha. It's not that malacha. It's a different inyan. You made a physical knot, but the malacha is a kesher shel kayama. The malacha is that you want a kesher nitzchi. You want an eternal kesher. A timeless kesher. A permanent kesher. In your mind, the expression of Shulchan Aruch Harav and Simon Shin Yud Zayin Sif Aleph, based on the Rishonim, that the definition of Shesher Gamaz al das sheyishar kein la'olam. That's the malacha. That's the malacha. Now, if you're missing that, even if you say, I want it for 15 years, a knot for 15 years is pretty good. That's not the malacha. The malacha is not, you want a knot for 50 years. The malacha is, you want it to be permanent. Never change. That's malacha from Minat Torah. That you didn't do. It's not, you did part of it. You did not do that malacha. Yes. Just like akira, the akira is the beginning of a hanocha. Hanocha is the end of an akira. Obviously, it's connected. You made a knot. You did something very similar. But you're missing the very tzuras hamalacha. Why? Because the time element is the definition of the malacha min ha-Torah. So therefore, just like akira without hanocha is mutter min ha-Torah, hanocha without akira is mutter min ha-Torah, a kesher that's not a kesher shel kayama is mutter min ha-Torah, even if you have in mind that it should be semi-permanent, but after a certain amount of time, you want to untie it because you know that this string you're going to need for something in a month or a week or in 3 weeks or in 3 months, it's mutter min ha-Torah. If this is the case, though, we are now confronted by a major problem. And that is, and here we come to the end of the Masechta, why is it that the Chachamim became so lenient when it came to knots? And they said that if it's for a mitzvah, you're allowed to make an impermanent knot on Shabbos. And yet, Akira and Hanocha, they never gave any exemptions, even for a mitzvah. How do we know? Take the first Mishnah of Shabbos. What's the first Mishnah of Shabbos? There's a poor man and a rich man, a balabayas inside and a poor man outside. Why did the Mishnah give this story about a poor man and a balabayas? Why can't you just say two people? One person is inside, one person is outside, and the person inside gives the food to the person outside. Why does the Mishnah talk about the scenario of a balabayas and an ani? So the Meiri says, and the Bartanura says, and the Acharonim explains this, some Sofer, long some Sofer about this, Svasemis about it, the Shabbos Shalmi about it, a lot of Svarim discuss this, but it already begins from the Meiri and the Rabbeinu Avadi Bartanura on Shabbos. There's a big chiddush here. Tzedakah is a mitzvah. Here's a poor man who wants to eat. This is a mitzvah of tzedakah. It's a mitzvah min ha-Torah. A poor man comes and asks you for food. You're doing a mitzvah. You would think, for a mitzvah, the rabbis would say, no problem, do an akira without a hanacha, do an akira without an akira. It's for a mitzvah. After all, that's what happened by tying. They allowed them to tie a clay cheres with a strand of reed. It's not a permanent kesher. That's why, by the way, they used a strand of reed. Why they use reed? Two reasons. Rashi explains, it's animal fodder. Because it's animal fodder, it's precious. You don't want to waste it. So you're not going to leave it there permanently because you need food for the animal. Remember, food was scarce. If you have food for your animal, you want to have it. So therefore, when you tie the earthenware vessel with reed to a stick, we know it's not permanent because you're going to want to give it to your animal. So at some point, after the mace is gone, you're going to remove it and you're going to use the reed for something else. It's impermanent. There's another reason. The reed at some point is going to dry up. It's going to decompose and wither away. So this knot is not going to be permanent. So therefore, even if you tried, it can't be a permanent knot. So it's an impermanent knot. So it's only prohibited rabbinically. So the rabbis allowed you to do it for the sake of a mitzvah, for the sake of establishing halacha. Why? Because here they had to know if there's tumah or not, for the sake of understanding what's the right way to behave according to halacha. And then you're allowed to make a knot on Shabbos if it's impermanent. So they ask the Lubavitch Rabbi, I don't understand. By akira and anocha, it's a chatzi melacha, it's not a chatzi shir, it's mutam in atayra, it's only asim b'derabbanan, and yet... And yet, even for a mitzvah of tzedakah, mamish a mitzvah sase, and a mitzvah like sikpatel, the ani comes to you and says, I'm hungry. You're doing a mitzvah. So I'm a chaya, do an akira without anacha. Take the challah, put it in the basket, stretch out your hand. So you picked it up from your kitchen table, stretch out your hand to outside. You didn't put it down. Let the poor man take it from you, and he'll put it down. He'll lead it in Shusarabim. Wonderful. Gevaldik, amachaya. You did an akira without hanochim and atayra, there was no problem. And the rabbis say, I know we have an issue with this, but for a mitzvah, we're allowing you to do it. And yet, but they don't do that. And that's why the Mishnah gives the scenario of a poor man and a balabayas. When it comes to the end of the Masechta, when it comes to tying knots, everything changes. It's a chatzi melacha. And min atayra, it's mutter. And therefore the rabbis say, even midirabbanan, and it's also mutter if it's for the sake of a mitzvah. Why this distinction? If you'll tell me that haitzah an achnasa, akirin anicha is a chatzi shir, it's asim min ha-Torah, I understand, but it's not. It's only asim midirabbanan, min ha-Torah, akira without anach, anach without akira, is not the malacha, it's a chatzi malacha. You started to do the things that will make it into a malacha, but you didn't do the malacha yet. You're missing the tsuras ha-malacha, as explained. We explain by kshir is exactly the same thing. That's why an impermanent kasher is only asum ed-rabbana. Why is it mutter min ha-Torah? Because it's not a chatzi shir, it's a chatzi malacha. If you don't make a permanent kasher, you didn't do the musik of kshir. You're missing the tsura of a kasher. The tsura of a kasher in Torah is what? Permanent. Kasher shokayama. Zolzai. So it's mutter. So the rabbi said it's asur. And here, they compromise. They negate on their issue. They say, Nishkeferlich, if it's from mitzvah, we suspend it. Now the truth is, you might say, famous Tosfos in Maseches Shabbos, Dav Chav Gimel, Tosfos in Chulin Kuv Dalet, Tosfos in Nidil Amid Gimel, it's brought all in footnote 26. Tosfos says, when it comes to different gzeiros on Shabbos, it's very hard to compare one to another. Tosfos says, Shema ein lahashvois gzeiros shel chachamim zu lezu oisum sheinu b'malacha achas. When you have gzeiros and different malachas, Tosfos says, when you're going to start making comparison, you're going to come up with questions. You can't compare. You have to know that Chacham had a certain cheshb in one malacha, they made a gzeira. Another malacha, they didn't make a gzeira. So it could be by Yitzah and Achnasa, when it came to carrying. They said, here, the gzeira is always. We're never changing, even for a mitzvah. By Kshira, we're taking away the gzeira. When it comes to tzedakah, when it comes to a mitzvah, we're taking it away. And Tosfos says that it's very hard to use the same logic and use it as a pervading thread through all the malachas. However, when it comes to this situation, it's actually the other way around. There's a problem here. There's a contradiction. Because if they left this prohibition by Hayikira and Anocha, they certainly should have done it by Kshira. And I'll tell you why. What does it take for an Akira to evolve into an Issa Min HaTorah? What does it take for a Hanocha to evolve into an Issa Min HaTorah? What has to happen? If I pick up the challah from my kitchen table and I stretch out my hand, I didn't do an Issa Min HaTorah. What does it take for me to do an Issa Min HaTorah? I have to do another action. I have to go outside, or I have to take it and put it down outside. I have to do another action. Still, the Chachamim said, even though you have to do another action, we will prohibit doing the first action, even if it's for a mitzvah. What about by an impermanent knot? What has to happen to turn it into a Min HaTorah from a Midrabanan? The answer is no action at all. Just a change of thought. The moment I say, you know what? I don't want it for 3 months. I just want it to be there for good. It becomes an Issa Min HaTorah. You see the difference? For Akira or Hanocha to devolve into an Issa Min HaTorah, you have to do another Pu'ula, another action. Either to do a Hanocha after an Akira, or before your Hanocha to do an Akira. But when it comes to a kesher she'enish shel kayama, all you're missing is the das. It's only a kavana and a machshava. So here we have a serious problem. If by akira and anocha, where the isum midirabonon will not develop into an isum in atayra unless you do another action. And still the chachamim said, we are afraid that if we allow an akira, you could come to anocha. If we allow an anocha, you could come to do an akira before the anocha. And even if it's for the sake of a mitzvah, we will never ever allow this to happen. Even an akira without anocha, anocha without an akira, even though it takes an action afterwards to make it prohibited min atayra, certainly by kshira. Where the transformation from a rabbinic isser to a Torah isser is only an issue of thought. The moment I just think that I want this to be permanent becomes an isser min HaTorah, for sure the rabbis should have not allowed you to make an impermanent knot, even if it's for the sake of a mitzvah. Madoch, it's a kal v'chomer, madoch by Akira and Anocha. They would never allow you to do one of them, even though it's only an Issa Midrabanan, even if it's for the sake of a mitzvah. You want to feed the poor man, bring him home. You can't give him the food outside, even if it's only an Akira. Why? Because a mitzvah is not enough to cancel out this Issa Midrabanan, because it can bring you to an Issa Midrabanan, even though you have to do an action to come to the Issa Midrabanan. Certainly by Kshira, where you don't have to do an action to make it an Issa Midrabanan. All you have to do is a little firing of a neuron, a thought. It's a nice knot. We're leaving it. And it becomes an Issa Min HaTorah. Isn't that a tremendous, tremendous concern? And they should therefore prohibit it, even b'makom mitzvah? L'chaira, strong, strong question. A big question. To clarify it a bit more, if you open up a Rambam, Hilchas Shabbos, Perek Chof Aleph, the Rambam tells us that the Torah says tishbois, and the Chachamim therefore included in the word tishbois even things that are not prohibited min HaTorah, but the Chachamim here were given a mandate by Moshe Rabbeinu from Hashem that Shabbos has to be a day of rest, and therefore they included various prohibitions that are not biblically prohibited but rabbinically prohibited. And then the Rambam says they include two types of malachas of midrabanan. One is things that if you do them, they will bring you to an Issa Min HaTorah. They may bring you to an Issa Min HaTorah. And the other category are things that will not bring you to an Issa Min HaTorah, but they look like an Issa Min HaTorah. And throughout the next three chapters, the Rambam distinguishes between these two types of Issurim Derabbanan. One is an Issur Derabbanan because if we allow you to do this, you may come to do an Issa Min HaTorah. For example, Akira and Hanocha. If I allow you to do an Akira on Shabbos, I'm going to stretch out my hand with a challah. And what will I do? Maybe I'll forget, or maybe I won't realize, or I'll make a mistake, and I'll put it down. So the Chachamim said, no Akira. That's one category. And then the Rambam says, another category. Not because it's going to bring you to an Issa Min HaTorah, but because it looks like an Issa Min HaTorah. And therefore, they decided that the Shabbos restrictions should include and encompass these things too, because it looks like an Issa Min HaTorah. Like the Rambam says, it's doimel Issa Min HaTorah. This is what the Rambam says. And he says it's two separate categories. One category is Gzeira Shema Yavimen Isser Skila. Gzeira Shema Yavimen Isser, that's one category. And another category is Asru Chachamim Neshehin Doimim Lemelachas, because it's similar to Malachas Shabbos. Now, you might say, even the second one is, because it's similar, you may come to do the second one from the first one. But then why does the Rambam say it's two separate categories? It's all the same category. From this, you're going to come to the other one. The Rambam says, clearly, it's two separate categories. Why? Because it's two different types of Malachas. One is Asad Rabbanim, because it can bring you to an Issa Min HaTorah. The other one is Asad Rabbanim, not because it can bring you an Issa Min HaTorah. It's not going to bring you to Issa Min HaTorah. They weren't worried about that. But it looks like something that's Issa Min HaTorah. And because it looks like something that's Issa Min HaTorah, therefore the Chachamim included that in the Melachas that are Asar on Shabbos. A very different definition. That's what the Rambam clarifies. And it's interesting. People don't always realize this. But when you learn through the Rambam, the Prakim, he distinguishes different Issurim the Rabbanim, if it falls into the first category or it falls into the next category. If so, it seems that this is the difference between Akira Hanocha and Kshira. Akira and Hanocha, as Rashi says clearly, the reason is they were afraid it's going to bring you to an Issa Min HaTorah. If that's the case, we understand why they couldn't allow you to do it B'mkai Mitzvah. Because even if you're going to do a mitzvah, what does it help? When the Rabbanim said you're not allowed to do something because it may bring you to an Issa Min HaTorah, what's the pshat? The pshat is that it's Be'etzem HaTorah Deke Isser. It's Be'etzem HaChshash Deiraisa. The Torah allows you to do it, but the Rabbanim are basically building a fence so they don't fall into the ditch. So it's Be'etzem HaChshash Min HaTorah. The Rabbanan are saying, don't do this, because if you do this, you could come to an Issa Min HaTorah. So even if it's for the sake of a mitzvah, the rabbis are not going to be matirit. For the sake of a mitzvah, you're allowed to fall prey to an Issa Min HaTorah. If this can really cause you to come to an Issa Min HaTorah, for example, Chacham said you have to check chametz the night before Pesach, called bdikas chametz. So Taisha says, why can't you be mevatel chametz? I says, Shema Yavei Lachli, you may come to eat it. If it's a serious situation that you may come to eat this, so then they're not going to allow you to leave chametz around for any reason. So therefore, they're not going to allow you to do this malacha of Akira or Hanacha for a mitzvah. If it's going to bring you, chas v'shalom, if it can bring you to an Issa Min HaTorah, so there's no exceptions. But if the only reason that they asked it was not because it could bring you to a Min HaTorah, it's because the Rabbanim themselves asked it because they expanded Shabbos to things that look like Malachas Shabbos. So now, hey mamru v'hey mamru, they could say, okay, in the same case of a mitzvah, we're not going to give this Issa. That would explain a beautiful distinction. By Akira and Hanocha, they were afraid that it's going to bring you to an Issa Min HaTorah. So the Chashash is a Torah Dikah. So why would a mitzvah change that? Because I'm doing a mitzvah, therefore, it's not going to become Issa Min HaTorah. I'm not going to do an Issa Min HaTorah. I may come to do an Issa Min HaTorah. How can they allow me to do it? Masha'inkin, if it's only because it's doimet to an Issa Min HaTorah, so be'etzim it's an Issa D'Rabbanan. They expanded the definition of Shvisa on Shabbos, that it should include also things that are similar to Min HaTorah, not because they're afraid that I'm going to come to do an Issa Min HaTorah, because if that would be the case, the Rambam wouldn't say it's two categories. It's all the same category. You're going to come to an Issa Skila. He says clearly there's two categories. They expanded the definition of Shabbos. If that's the case, they could say, you know what? In a case of a mitzvah, we're going back and we're telling you could do this. Very geschmack. By Kshira, the Vart is, it looks like an Issa Min HaTorah. Kesher She'ena Shel Kayama reflects a Kesher Shel Kayama. They're very similar. So the Chachamim said, don't do this because it looks like this. In the case of a mitzvah, we let you do it. By Akira and Hanach, it's not that it looks like Haitzah. It's because it's going to bring you to a full Haitzah. Here the Chachamim didn't allow you to do it, even by Mekai Mitzvah. Very geschmack, beautiful. But this only makes the question much stronger. Why were they not afraid that by Kshira, She'ena Shel Kayama, you're going to come to a Kesher Shel Kayama? If I cared, I would be afraid there much more than by Akira and Hanocha. Because by Akira and Hanocha, as I said, you have to do a second action. Here, you don't have to do a second action. You just have to have a thought for a moment that you want it to be permanent. And Chassal said the Pesach, you are over them in the Torah. So ma do chakira na noche, the had a chashash is going to bring you to an Isser skila for sure by kshira. Sheinu shel kayama, they should have had a chashash is going to bring you to a kashash shel kayama. If we allow a Jew to make an impermanent knot, even for the sake of a mitzvah, what's going to happen? He can come to make a permanent knot just by shifting his thoughts. So how can we allow a Jew to do an impermanent knot, even for the sake of a mitzvah? You're telling me the reason they prohibited an impermanent knot is not because it's going to bring you to a permanent knot. It's only because it's similar to a permanent knot, and that's why for the sake of a mitzvah, they don't mind. Why weren't they worried that it's going to bring you to a permanent knot, just like they were worried by Akira and Hamacha? What is it? Why taka? When it comes to Malachas Hakshira, which is not Shel Kayama, it's a chatzi malacha, we explained. It's not a chatzi shir, it's a chatzi malacha. So just like by Akira, which is a chatzi malacha, they were worried it's going to bring to a full malacha, which is a hanacha. Here, why were they not worried? And therefore, it's mutter l'tzarech mitzvah, as we see at the end of the Masechta. So we're left here with a big challenge, with a big problem, with a big question. So I'm going to leave you with one thought, and I want you to think about this. I want you to think what would be the answer to this question. I'm going to leave you with one thought to plant a seed, and then we're going to, Be'ezer Hashem, complete the answer tomorrow's shir, which is Thursday, 9 o'clock p.m. at the yeshiva.net. We're going to complete the answer and go to the nista part. But here's the point, and I want you to think about this, okay? Let's say, I'm shifting channels, I'm going through a different realm completely, not halacha, not lamdas, but just I want you to think about this question. If somebody gets married and they tell their spouse, I want to marry you and we want to be a couple and we want to be connected and we want to be one for 10 years. That's what we want. We want to be married for 10 years. After 10 years, we separate, we get divorced. But for 10 years, we are a complete and absolute husband and wife with a full relationship like any other husband and wife. Absolutely no difference. All the chiyuvim of the ksuva, every element of the relationship is perfect and absolute and unwavering. The commitment is there for 10 years in an absolute way. But right after 10 years, boom. You hear my question? So now I want to ask you. How would you define this marriage for the first 10 years when they're married? How would you define the marriage? Is it like every other marriage? It's just after 10 years it's going to change? Or it's very different than every other marriage? And what's the difference? Or if I can give another example. Somebody has a child, and the child begins to grow up, and they tell the child, you know, when we gave birth to you, we decided that we're going to keep you as our child for 10 years. For 10 years, you are our child. But after 10 years, we disown you. Now you figure out your life. We'll take care of you. We'll set you up somewhere. But you're not our child anymore. But for the first 10 years, you're mamish our child. What would you say about those first 10 years when this child is raised by its parents? Are they the same 10 years like by any other child? After 10 years, there's a difference. But those 10 years, it's the same. Or maybe those 10 years are also very different. And what's the difference? Those are the two questions I want to ask you about relationships. Think about it, reflect on it, and if you think well about it, you'll begin to discover the halachic answer. This is an answer in halacha, in lamdas, that the Lubavitcher Rebbe is going to suggest to understand meleches kshira min haTorah versus meleches haTzah, which will explain the difference between the beginning of the Masechta, which is not allowed by Makam Mitzvah, Kiro Hanacha, and the end of the Masechta, Kshira, which Pekikin Amayadim Vekoshim B'Shabbos, which is allowed by Makam Mitzvah, which will then allow us to understand clearly the order of the Mishnah, Pekikin, and then Maidadin, and then Koshrin, as we will explore Be'ezer Hashem in tomorrow's Shir, part 2 of the Hadron Masechta Shabbos, tomorrow night, 9 o'clock p.m. See you then at the yeshiva.net. Part 2 of the Hadron, and I say to you once again, Mazal Tov, Sisu v'Simchu, b'Simchas HaTorah of Hadron Alach Maseches Shabbos, Usnu Chavod LaTorah. Thank you. Good night. Those of you who want, you can ask some questions, and I'll take some questions for a few minutes. When you split up the Shir into two parts, is that a definition of Chatzi Shir? Or a definition of chatzi melacha? Git gesagt. You want to know if it's just a chatzi shir, sahal b'shir, or it's a chatzi melacha? I'm afraid that it's a chatzi melacha, not a chatzi shir. That's what I'm afraid. It's a ganze shir and a chatzi melacha, right? Because it's a shir, but it's a chatzi melacha. Akira without hanacha and vice versa, it's an incomplete melacha. Right, it's an incomplete melacha. Completely, the melacha never happened. The tzura of the melacha never materialized. It's a half a melacha. You started to do the melacha, you picked it up, but you didn't finish the melacha. Chatzi shir means you did the whole melacha. It's just you're missing in the quantity of the melacha, but the tzir of the melacha is there. Why did the Chachamim aser hanocha without akira? You're not going to make another akira after the hanocha. That's a good question. You understand why they asered akira, because from an akira you can make a hanocha. But once you're making a hanocha, you're not going to make another akira. That's a good question. So if you look in footnote 22, he brings from Shulchan Aruch Harav Simon Shin Mem Zayin, the reason that Chachamim asked Akira and Anoch is Gzeira Shema Yavoyu Kol Echad VeEchad Mehem Lasis Malacha Shlema B'Shabbos. It's a Gzeira that every one of them may come to do a full Malacha on Shabbos. This is Shulchan Aruch Harav Shin Mem Zayin, based on Rashi, Shabbos, Dav Beis Amid Aleph. But the Balatanya added one word, Mehem. Rashi doesn't have the word Mehem. You see? Look in the Balatanya's words. Gzeira Shema Yavoyu Kol Echad VeEchad Mehem Lasas Malacha Shlema B'Shabbos. Rashi took out the word Mehem. Rashi doesn't have the word Mehem. Shulchan Aruch Harav added the word Mehem. Why? So the Rebbe suggests V'yeshlema Shekavonas Admur Hazokin Lahadgish Shegzeira Zu V'Hachshasha Higam Al Misha Oysa Ha'anocha Bilvad V'Hagzeira Yishalo Yavoy Hu Atzmoy Lasas Malacha Shlema B'Pam Beis. The Shulchan Aruch Harav is emphasizing here that the Gzeira is not only on the one who made the Akira that he might make the Hanocha. The Gzeira is also on the one who only made the Hanocha. What's the Gzeira? He's not going to make an Akira. He did the Hanocha only. The Gzeira is that he himself shouldn't come to do a complete Malacha a second time. In other words, if you allow him to do a Hanocha now, even though he didn't do the Akira, next Shabbos, he's going to say, oh, I did an Hanocha. Yeah, I put it down. I'll already do an Akira also. So the Chashash is also for the person who did the Hanocha. You're not only worried about the person doing an Akira that he may do a Hanocha, but you're also worried about the person doing a Hanocha, only a Hanocha. And the Gzeira is what? The Gzeira is not only that if you ask it an Akira, you have to ask it an Hanocha. The Gzeira is tack on the person who did the Hanocha. That's why his language is Gzeira Shema Yavoyu, Kol echad ve'echad mehem lasas malacha shleima b'shabbos. Mehem. You're worried about both of them. Even the one who's doing anacha, you're worried that another time he's going to do an akira. It's not pshat gzeir shem yavayu kol echad ve'echad lasas malacha shleima b'shabbos. You're worried that every person is going to come to do a malacha shleima b'shabbos. But rather, and hanacha is atu akira. No, you're also worried about the guy who's doing the hanacha. That's the pshat. And then he brings a shaklavataria of Rashi and Tosfos over there on Dav Gimel Amud Aleph about Akira and Hanocha. So that's the reason they answered both an Akira and a Hanocha. Next question. Where's the Chiddush of Tosfos that you have to say the Chiddush first? So you look in footnote 7. It's Tosfos Kiddushin Daf Mem Aleph, the Berjana Rav, Reb Shalom Mordechai Shvadron, the famous Maharsham, the Berjana Rav in his Sefer Divrei Shalom, under the entry Zuvein Tzarech Leimarzu, discusses it at length. Stechema discusses it at length. Look in footnote 7. He gives all the footnotes about that Tosfos to understand why that is the main Chiddush. Okay, we'll stop here. Have a wonderful night, and Be'ezer Hashem will continue Thursday evening, 9 o'clock p.m. sharp at theyeshiva.net. Thank you very, very much. Have a wonderful evening, and Mazel Tov.
This class is brought to you by theyeshiva.net. Please help us continue the classes. Make even a small contribution at www.theyeshiva.net/donate.